Romans 11. Verse 8, as it is written, according as it is written, God hath given them the spirit of slumber, eyes that they should not see, and ears that they should not hear unto this day. And David said, let their table be made a snare, and a trap, and a stumbling block, and a recompense unto them. Let their eyes be darkened that they may not see, and bow down their backs always. Let's go to Psalm 69:13. But as for me, my prayer is unto thee, O Lord, in an acceptable time. O God, in the multitude of thy mercy, hear me. In the truth of thy salvation, deliver me out of the mire, and let me not sink. Let me be delivered from them that hate me, and out of the deep waters. Let not the water flood overflow me, neither let the deep swallow me up. And let not the pit shut her mouth upon me. Now remember, David was the primary psalmist, but there were 10 others that wrote the Psalms. And the Psalms are really written by the Spirit of Christ in them, and they were the prayers of Christ as he walked the earth. And now they're the prayers of Christ in you. If you ever apply any of the good stuff to you, to your flesh, then you will always be in error. This is always about Christ. Verse 16. Hear me, O Lord, for thy loving kindness is good. Turn unto me according to the multitude of thy tender mercies. Hide not thy face from thy servant, for I am in trouble. Hear me speedily. Draw nigh unto my soul and redeem it. Deliver me because of mine enemies. Thou hast known my reproach and my shame and my dishonor. Mine adversaries are all before me. Reproach hath broken my heart, and I am full of heaviness. And I looked for some to take pity, but there was none, and for comforters, but I found none. They gave me also gall for my meat, and in my thirst they gave me vinegar to drink. Let their table become a snare before them, and that which should have been for their welfare, let it become a trap. Let their eyes be darkened that they see not, and make their loins continually to shake. Pour out thine indignation upon them, and let thy wrathful anger take hold of them. Let their habitation be desolate, and let none dwell in their tents. For they persecute him whom they have smitten, and they talk to the grief of those whom thou hast wounded. Add iniquity unto their iniquity, and let them not come into thy righteousness. Let them be blotted out of the book of the living, and not be written with righteousness. Now, if you read the commentaries about this, this is Jesus talking only to the Jews. But I believe he's talking to the human race. Once the human race killed the Son, then there's no more redemption. There's a new race, a new thing has happened. That's what the whole purpose of everything that we're about. But it has to be total. It can't be partial. Now, Israel is no different than others. We just read, just as Elijah said, he had reserved 7,000 for him. So it is probably still true today that with Israel or with others. We don't know, but we know that part of Israel will be saved, but not because they're called themselves Israel. Now, we have to reach this point where we understand that we are the ones that have crucified him, that we are the ones that Christ is speaking of here, so that we no more give any breath or importance whatsoever to what our senses tell us, to what our mind talk is, to what we see with around us. Our sustenance must come only from him. Last night we spent a great deal of time talking about this whole idea that the curse is endemic. It's everywhere. It's part of you. It's part of who you are. And until you come to the end of yourself, then you are here. Your eyes are darkened. There's a deep spirit of slumber upon you because you make judgments based on your senses rather because you're still in time and space instead of eternity. We talked about how when Paul said in Philippians, and you can go check it out later, he said, "Many walk of whom I have told you often and now tell you again even weeping that they are the enemies of the cross of Christ, whose God is their appetites or their belly, whose glory is in their shame, for they mind earthly things." And that refers directly back to the curse when he said to the snake, "You shall be led upon thy belly, you shall go, or you shall be led by your belly or by your appetites, and dust shall you eat all the days of your life." As long as you are living in the environment of time and space, dust will be your sustenance. And we talked about it last night, even including about sex, because sex is just dust integrating with dust. The only way that we can be free is to consider ourselves dead. Not to try to die, that will give you life. But to consider, mortify your flesh, mortify your members. See that there is no life in anything else except him. We also talked about how that last enemy to be destroyed is really hope. As long as you still have hope in something of the senses, then the Jebusites are still on the land. They're still in your Jerusalem. They're still occupying. Remember, and we talk, if you remember Jebusite, this comes from the word bus in Hebrew, and it means to trodden underfoot. And the idea is that as long as the Jebusites are on the land, as long as you have hope in anything other than the resurrection, then you are trodding underfoot the blood of the covenant. And considering that it's of no value, because you're still with the Gentiles making judgments, and your feelings are controlled by your senses. So the whole of chapter, let's go back to chapter 11. The whole of chapter 11 is about this. It's really about the Jews, but it's also about the human race. In 1 Corinthians, it says, Paul said that death, O grave, where is thy victory? Wait. Let's go there. Let me get it exactly. 1 Corinthians 15. Verse 53, for this corruptible must put on incorruption, and this mortal must put on immortality. So when this corruptible shall have put on incorruption, and this mortal shall put on immortality, then shall be brought to pass the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. O death, where is thy sting? O grave, where is thy victory? The sting of death is sin, and the strength of sin is the law. But thanks be to God, which giveth us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. Therefore, my beloved brethren, be ye steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, for as much as you know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. Now, as last night we talked about how that you hear this and you think that death is swallowed up in victory because at some day in the future when you die, then you're going to be resurrected and go to Beulah land. But you must understand that death is swallowed up in victory now, but only if you accept your death. If you continue, and you, the evidence that you don't accept your death is you still believe the voices in your head. You still believe the senses. You still operate as though you were just another Gentile. But you can now live in the place where death is swallowed up in victory because of his resurrection in you now. You're not subject to all of the stuff that your mind tells you. You're not subject to all of the voices. You don't need to give them one iota of importance. You're a debtor to no part of your flesh. And you don't, and again, it's all of life then is to find out if there's anything that you still are a debtor to the flesh about, either positive or negative. And it's just, it pains me to see and hear and watch you just, you know, in some stupid little thing. It may not be stupid or little to you, but in the economy of God, it's stupid and little. You're all of a sudden, you've lost the peace. You're all upset at something. And you don't have to do that anymore. You don't have to sell out for some little shiny thing. You don't have to give breath to what you feel like or what's going on. You're anchored to something that's far greater. What, Gary?
I'm thinking of the sin offering life at the door. There's all this stuff, you know, something's always trying to capture you and draw you away and get your attention and titillate your senses, whatever. But when you see, and I think that's what it means, are to put on incorruption, is you remember and you stop, you turn. The price is paid. There's no penance. It's
all right, back to Romans. Again, as we just read this in Psalms, but in 9, as David said, let their table be made a snare and a trap and a stumbling block and a recompense unto them. Let their eyes be darkened that they may not see and bow down their back always. Now again, even the very things that everything, and it's to all of us. This is all of us. That what we, our table is always a snare. We can always see it as nourishment or in something that is going to improve our physical self. And if the moment you do that, then it has become the snare. That's why, you know, if you have food and shelter, therewith be content. Then, and it's not talking about, well, this is not food I like. If you have food and shelter, therewith be content. To lose the capacity to think that the moment you're in should be different than it is the essence of what Christianity is. And it doesn't matter what that moment is. Let this corruption put on incorruption. The only way corruption can put on incorruption is how you look at it. Everything that you can sense, taste, smell, feel, see, hear is corruptible. It changes with time, and that's what the word vanity means. So corruption must put on incorruption. Christ must not only be in you, but you must also be in him. You must be crucified unto the world, but the world must also be crucified unto you. And what is the world? The world isn't a physical place. The world is. There's no place on the physical earth that is any more world than any place else. You're just as much in the world if you're in a building called the House of God or in Bible study at Trinity as you are if you're in, you know, I don't care, the biggest sin den in the world. The world is that which is in time and space. The spirit is what is in eternity. And so every place your foot touches has the potential of being holy ground. Every act that you do, no matter what it is, has the potential to be worship. There is no difference in physical space as long as time exists. There's no holy place any more than any place else because the Holy One, that which makes it holy, is within you. That's why I got so upset when several of you thought there was something special about Trinity. There's absolutely nothing special about us. And well, everybody says, well, where else? Who else teaches this? I don't know, but I promise you that it's being taught all over the world. We just don't see it. But you, someplace, somewhere, you've got to stop ministering to self. It's got to stop. What?
She's over there laughing.
You know what it means to minister to self? To pay any attention to wants or desires. Or needs.
That thing you're talking about a minute ago, the world crucified unto me and I'm crucified to the world, that's the double, it's a double death. It's, and you got to see it both ways or it doesn't mean anything.
This isn't, and again, it can start this instant. And it can, you never again need to go back. You come out of that. Come out of her, my people. Touch not the unclean thing. The unclean thing that you touch is you. You touch the dead body and knead the ashes of the red heifer the minute you give importance to something that you feel or see or smell or whatever. Does that make any sense to anybody? Then how can you forget it? How does that happen? Oh, I forgot.
Well, we're wired that way. Yes, no? Romans 7?
But you got we went through Romans 7. Now we're in Romans 8. Is
but we even though we forget, we still show up here every day.
That's no merit in that. The merit is living it 24 hours a day. There's no merit in living it. What am I talking about?
I tried to do it yesterday.
Let's go to Revelation 21. And I saw a new heaven and a new earth. And he's not talking about, the word earth there just means land, the promised land. I saw the new heaven and the new earth, the new land. For the first heaven and the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. And I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, Behold, the tabernacle of God is with or in men, and he will dwell in them and with them. They shall be his people, and God himself shall be with them and be their God. Now, you got to see this at some point. You got to hear it before you can see it. The New Jerusalem that descended and came down and touched earth. And it didn't go back up. And it's all of time. It's the New Jerusalem is our only reality, no matter where you are on the face of the earth. And all of time is going, and it's traveling from west to east. It's backward from everything else. Time is traveling, and it's going, everything is going into that new, the temple of the New Jerusalem. And everything that came from the New Jerusalem, everything that came from eternity, and there's only one that did, it's Christ in you, the hope of glory, remains. And everything else goes out the east gate. It goes into the Valley of Hinnom, or Gehenna. Gehenna is the word for hell. That's the dump of the New Jerusalem. That's all it is. It's just like every time you take a crap or urinate, it's going into the dump. Every time you breathe out, it's going into the dump. And the only purpose is to see whether anything that is in time and space can take you, his people, off the mercy seat. There on the mercy seat only is the glory of God. And it always is here. And all of time is moving through it. And that's what we see when it says God is all and in all. He looked and he saw that God was in all and Christ was all and in all. He saw this mystery. On the Feast of Pentecost, John saw the New Jerusalem descend as a bride adorned for her husband, and it never went back up. We are seated with him on the mercy seat. You have no more, you can't have an issue. There can't be something that isn't of his hand. And in that place, you know with a certainty that his rod and his staff, they comfort you. So there can't be any more complaining. Hallowed be thy name. And you don't hallow his name anytime you think something is wrong. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall never again want or need. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. Because I know I'm going to screw up. But you never use that as an excuse. He leadeth me in the path of righteousness for his name's sake only. Yea, though I'm walking through the valley of the shadow of death, which is all of time and space, I will fear no evil. Nothing can touch me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. It doesn't matter what's going on, that feast is there. You anointest my head with oil, my cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy are pursuing me all the days of my life. And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever, from this point now until the end of time. Nothing can take me off that mercy seat. You've got to stop excusing rebellion. Oh, you don't understand. Oh, I heard that some dim men. This isn't something to think about and philosophize about and make grand statements about. It's something to live 24 hours a day. Amen?
Amen?
Is there any part of this that you don't understand? John?
I'm interested in the comment you made about New Jerusalem traveling from west to east.
Time is traveling from west to east through the New Jerusalem. The New Jerusalem stays secure.
Is there discussion about that? Well, the
implication is, it's not per se,
that,
but the implication...
That explains, that makes it clearer to me.
Yeah, because that's why we never again look to the rising sun. We are, the day begins at the setting sun, or when the day, the last day began when the sun darkened, when Christ died.
And it also explains this counterintuitive thing that we have, that what we think is best for us is not.
No, it's the worst for us.
Tell them the thing about Pharaoh getting up in the morning and looking to the east.
Yeah, of course I remember.
The west. It's like the human race looks to the east for the dawning day, and that's what Pharaoh did. He'd get up and wash himself and pray to the east with his back to the west.
And that's what you do.
The west of the Nile was the land of the dead.
Makes things more.
I've been saying this same thing for 35 years.
I just love
it. It's no excuse. The universe has been saying the same thing.
No, but I wish and I want and all
you blithering idiot.
Oh, but my voices keep talking to me. Well, you poor little pissant. Oh, my son called me and he chewed me out. I'm just crying about it.
I'm losing all patience, as you may see.
No.
Anybody? Kevin? Got any other complaints?
Wrote them down.
Jeff? You said you understood it last night. You understand it this morning?
I didn't understand it last night, and I understand it this morning.
That's why we're different.
I was fucking pissed off. That's why I did the pitch. I was pissed off last night. But now I get it. That's why I get a big old grin on my face. Because I'm a piss ant.
Alrighty, take a big guy. The lair opens today.
Would you send out an email to the group?
Why?
Well, I don't know. Because if you send out one instead of